Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast where we are going to be talking about cybersecurity. This is actually the fourth podcast that we are doing alongside Enterprise Ireland. And to help me with this podcast, Claire Walsh from Enterprise Ireland, who is my co-host today, has been so helpful in putting together an expert panel for today's discussion. So firstly, Claire, thank you so much for helping put together this group.
Hi, Dave. Thank you so much for allowing us to spotlight some of our great client companies and some of our network out here in the US. I work here in the New York office. I work specifically with our cybersecurity portfolio. And the role really is, you know, to take all these fantastic, innovative companies, these homegrown companies, and to help them accelerate their journey out here in the US. This work continues in all of the offices, all of the 40 offices we have globally at the moment. So basically what we're doing here is being replicated by my colleagues everywhere. So yeah, delighted to have the opportunity to talk about cybersecurity.
One of the things that you hear throughout this episode is the panelists really praising the work that Enterprise Ireland are doing, which is fantastic. So obviously Enterprise Ireland is having a big impact there. But one of the other things that I noticed when we were recording this panel is how the panel kept on bringing it back down to the human element within cybersecurity, that it wasn't just about computers and algorithms and systems, it was really about how can we protect people and how can we make sure that people aren't negatively impacted by anything harmful.
I completely agree. I think it was so interesting from the perspective of the participants that people are fundamentally at the core of this industry. And working in this industry, it is quite a special experience because you see the collaboration. It happens consistently. People are so generous with their time and their knowledge. And it really, that safeguarding piece is just, it's a real mission, I think, across the industry.
There definitely seems to be a sense of collaboration in the industry as well.
For sure. We're actually at an event here in Ireland where we've brought together some North American buyers to meet some of our client companies here in Ireland. This is something that we as Enterprise Ireland do regularly across all of our different markets. What's really interesting is when you get you get all these people into one room, the conversation does not stop flowing. It goes in so many diverse directions. There are so many ideas bouncing around between, you know, the North American delegation and the Irish companies. But not only that, if we get a group of our portfolio of companies into a room together, the conversations and the connectivity and the collaboration between them as companies across the portfolio, it's really great to see from our point of view.
I love that. And with that, I think let's drop our listener right into the panel. Now, cybersecurity covers off a very broad variety of different ways to protect businesses and users. So to help us with the discussion, we brought in a panel of experts. And here is this panel.
Hey, everybody. My name is Brian Honan. I'm CEO and founder of BH Consulting. BH Consulting is an independent cybersecurity and data protection consulting firm based out of Dublin.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dennis Damon. I'm a 30-year veteran of a chief information security officer, chief privacy officer, currently at Proofpoint as a resident chief information security officer living in the United States.
Hi, my name is Ryan Lasmaeli. I'm the CEO and co-founder at Voltry, which is a data in-use encryption technology company based in Cork.
I love this. So we've got a couple of founders here and folks that are passionate about the industry, which is fantastic. A great group to have this discussion. Before we jump into the industry, though, I'd love to learn a little bit more about each of you. Mainly, like, what was your inspiration behind jumping into this industry? And Brian, I'd love to start with you.
Oh, okay. Dave, I've been involved in cybersecurity way back when it was called information security, and before that it was called IT security, and before that it was called data security. So I suppose I've been involved in IT and security since the 1980s, from the beginning of my career. And throughout my career, I could see that security was becoming more and more important, but it was very much a techie focused area. It was for the geeks. It was for the IT nerds to worry about. And I suppose to fast forward then to 2004, when I set up BH Consulting. So we're nearly 20 years in business now. And back then, it was still very much an IT problem. Cybersecurity wasn't a business issue. It was a part of IT and was up to IT to look at. Lots of businesses out there didn't have anybody they could turn to give them independent advice. You know, what do I need to worry about from a cybersecurity point of view? And that's the reason I set up BH Consulting, is to provide that independent voice, to give guidance to people and advice to say, this is the best way for your business based on your business profile, based on your business risk, the landscape you're facing, the type of technology you're using. This is how we figure out you should be doing it. But I've always been passionate about cybersecurity because, you know, when people think about cybersecurity, they just seem to think about computers and that, you know, a cyber attack against a computer. So it's no big deal. It's just bits and bytes. Why should I worry about this? But if you do look at it and in a broader picture, our whole society now relies on IT and cyber and the internet, and we're dependent on so many things running smoothly and remaining secure. And we've seen prime examples here in Ireland in the past 2 or 3 years of that. Firstly, with the COVID pandemic, the move to the cloud, remote working, that made many businesses have to change their own business models. And we're still seeing the repercussions of that with remote working and hybrid working, and people now figuring to more than was in the HSE ransomware attack in 2021. And that really brought it home, I think, to everybody how important cybersecurity is. So that's why I'm passionate about it. It's not protecting computers, it's protecting people.
I love that, where you kind of bring it back down to, hey, like, let's not just think about this from the technical end of things. This has real world implications for people. So I love that. Dennis, I'd love to pass the same question over to you. Like, what was it that inspired you to jump into this industry?
So it's kind of an interesting story, and I lovingly blame my father for my career path, but I was actually going down the route of law enforcement. And when I say law enforcement, I'm talking about, you know, the police, you know, on the ground, writing tickets and whatnot. But growing up in a telecom family, you also got used to being exposed early to the technology. So I was the only kid in my neighborhood that actually had a Packard Bell computer. And because my father and my aunts and my uncles all worked for the telecom company, AT&T, I had four phone lines coming in. I mean, what kid in the mid-90s has four phone lines coming in? But I was actually on the internet very early on doing bulletin board systems. I ran a bulletin board system. I was working in what, you know, is now known as, or has been known as, Usenet or news groups. And I was fighting the good fight, actually, a little bit early on around spam and people sending spam to these news groups out there. I had finished my bachelor's, actually, in criminal justice. I came home for the summer, planning on going back to do the master's and the PhD in criminology. Literally came home to do a contracting job, and I'm probably going to age myself and maybe some others listening to the podcast here, but I was migrating AT&T from Token Ring to Ethernet and OS2, OS2
oh, wow.
to Windows. And my father calls me and says, hey, before you go back to school, you may want to consider that AT&T wants to start the internet. And I thought, nah, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see. I went and took an interview and basically ended up becoming the first policy person for AT&T, or back then it was SW Bell Net. But became the first policy person for AT&T Internet, and there was only about 60 of us. So I never went back to do law enforcement full time, but I was able to meld the two sort of ideas around my education, but my love and passion for security. And so I continued to fight the good fight in what I would describe as the tragedy of the commons that we have within the internet, that this resource has been put aside for all of us to use, but yet somebody continues to abuse or take more of what, you know, is their fair share of it.
I love that. And finally, over to you, Ryan. I'd love to hear your inspiration.
Yeah, sure. Definitely not the same scope of experience, but I did early in the days actually take my dad's $6,000 laptop and did take that apart. He didn't get it back. So that definitely did happen. But no, I've been always inspired by solving hard problems. And I have a passion for maths, various forms, but also looking at different kind of challenges. My background is actually financial maths and looking at how I can predict the future, right? Looking at different economic events, applying different models and looking at how I can use those. But with that comes a lot of data, right? And looking at how we are treating that data, how we are exposing that data in various different forms, has always intrigued me. And then breaking things and two coming together, right? Encryption has become actually a core element in this whole journey. So been looking at it for quite a long time, reading a lot of research papers, looking at why has nobody really solved or cracked that nut. And it came to quite a few fundamental points, but that is really how we started. And there are a few co-founders, and we came together. Some of us are knowing each other for over 12 years now. And we decided to solve that problem that nobody else was able or has solved to date. And when I say really solving that problem at source, fundamentally solving it, not building another workaround solution. And that's how we started. And we solved one problem, two, three, four, build a team out, and then ended up literally solving hundreds of problems along this journey.
Yeah. Like the fact that you took apart his laptop.
Yep. I did. And a few other things.
And a few other things too. Yeah.
Best way to learn.
Yeah.
I love that. So, and Ryan, I'll stick with you for this next part, because, you know, investment in cybersecurity seems to be absolutely soaring at the moment. What do you think has brought about the current level of interest and subsequent investment? I mean, it sounds like that, you know, there are still challenges and problems that companies like yours are trying to solve. Is it simply a matter of that?
It's a few. So it really depends what investor you're talking about, what vertical within this whole industry. You have ones that have a different edge or that have solved a unique problem, a very niche problem. You have others that solve more of a fundamental problem in this ecosystem. It's a huge industry. And so it really depends. But what I can tell you is the demand is massive, right? Especially for the ones that solve specific problems that help to unlock either, is it business value? Is it reducing risk? Is it more with a look at compliance and how we grow with compliance? Or is it helping to really reduce cost across the vertical? So it really depends what investor and vertical you're looking at. But yes, I do not see really a slowdown, but I actually see an increase, especially from the receiving end on really, but in terms of ones that solve problems. And once you can prove, okay, you solved a problem, it's going to enable this. And it's very clear, especially to investors, because they tend to be less technical and relying especially on a circle of experts that they have around them to translate that. Then yes, absolutely. I can give you some insights. We are totally swamped with investor interests from our side, but that is especially because we are solving a problem that they understand.
Right. And, you know, I'd love to turn this over to you, Dennis, as well, because is there anything else that you're seeing that could be also contributing to this growth of investment?
Oh yeah, sure. No, definitely. You know, if I put my sort of investor hat on now, because that's one of the things that we sometimes do in the area and why we're working with Enterprise Ireland, You know, the cybersecurity area right now is just exploding because of all the current issues that we're seeing. I was just actually at the National Cybersecurity or the National Cyber Summit actually in Huntsville, Alabama last week and doing a presentation on people-centric security and the issues that we're seeing. And while years ago, technology would have been the problem, you know, not enough firewalls, not enough VPNs, that sort of stuff. For the last several years, including even now, when you look at things like the Verizon DBR reports and the FBI's reports and all these sorts of studies, including one of the ones that we do at Proofpoint, the human factor report that we started, I think, in 2014, and then the voice of the CISO report as well. The number one issue still today is people, right? And that, you know, it's the weakest link that, you know, that's out there. And while we still have to protect the infrastructure, obviously, and what you guys are doing, Ryan, as an example, we still have to, you know, make sure that we're locking that mm-hmm. door and training the people and giving them the tools to secure them without getting in the way of them, right? We want mm-hmm. them to still be innovative. We still want them to be able to do their jobs and whatnot. But security has just taken a huge hit. And we've seen that even in recent weeks with the MGM hack, right? It's, I mean, that was a 10-minute hack, actually. And if you've read any of the details behind it, I won't go into all of it, but it took them 10 minutes to get into that whole system and to take them down. And so, yeah, it's, you know, the area is growing, and we're starting to even see, you know, even in the cyber insurance area, they're having lots of new requirements. They're tired of paying out these large amounts of money. Consumers are tired of their data being misused and lost as well. So, yeah, it's there's a lot of things that are pushing it right now.
That's really interesting because, you know, the MGM hack, for example, that is one where I've seen news about that constantly. And, you know, Brian, one of the things that you mentioned was this idea of like really focusing on the impact to everyday people. Are situations like this where it's really impacting everyday people, like helping grow the awareness in everyday people's minds that it's a need to invest in this area more so than anything at the moment?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's you know, it's not going to come to any to as a surprise to anybody listening to this podcast that you know, we depend more and more on computers and IT for our everyday lives, and with that dependency comes, you know, they bring a lot of benefits. The, you know, the fact that we're all able to have and record this podcast over the internet without having to be physically in the same room and have lots of expensive equipment, which you might have had to do 10, 15 years ago, is a good example of that. And, you know, we communicate with friends and relatives all over the world. The internet has brought lots and lots of benefits, but that dependency has brought lots and lots of different risks as well. And to be fair and to be blunt as well, is that many of the systems we're using were never designed to be secure from the ground up. And we can see that time and time again as, you know, with the growth of IoT and other solutions, we're repeatedly making the same mistakes over again. You know, you've got insecure systems, insecure software. So there is a growing need now from businesses to sort of say, hang on, if we're going to depend on this internet and these computers, we need to make them as secure as possible, because the impact on our business is too much if there is an issue. And Dennis mentioned the MGM hack there, like that not only impacted MGM as a business directly, it also impacted its customers. There was talks about people having to you know, to get to their hotel room, having to be physically escorted to their room to be let in by an MGM staff member because their key cards wouldn't work. Slot machines and everything else on the casino floors weren't working properly. So maybe, you know, maybe that was a good thing for some people. It might have saved them a few some money. But when we see cybersecurity incidents now, it's a lot more impactful. 10 years ago, cybersecurity incidents were less impactful. The motivations by criminals was very much to extract information out of organizations in a stealth-like manner so that they could resell it or reuse it in some other way. So they try and steal financial information to try and use that. They steal credit cards, data to try and do that, the state intellectual property to try and sell that on. Today's attacks are much more disruptive and therefore much more in your face. Ransomware attacks have been a huge driver, I think, in raising awareness of cybersecurity at the non-IT level. It's when we're going to boards now of our clients that are asking us, what are, you know, what is in place to protect us against ransomware? What do we need to do to make sure we don't get negatively impacted by this? So things are much, you know, our dependency on the internet has grown exponentially, and therefore the risks also have grown, which is making the driver for investment, not just as from consumers and businesses, but also for investors looking for innovative businesses such as Ryan's there to that are solving problems to try and make the world a more secure place.
Now, Brian, sticking with you for a moment, because, you know, one of the things that you've highlighted there, like, and, you know, I know we keep talking about MGM, but just stick with them as an example, that this isn't just something that impacts MGM. This is going to impact their customers, their users, and it's also potentially going to impact other companies as well, because a 10-minute attack like that could potentially impact another business in the future. Yep. So I always assume that the challenges faced by one company are very similar to others. How important is knowledge sharing when it comes to cybersecurity, and how collaborative is this industry to improve cybersecurity overall?
It's a great question, Dave. And you know, again, using the MGM hack as an example, and maybe to pick up something Dennis said as well, like the MGM hack was involved a phishing attack against MGM, where the credentials of one of the staff was stolen. Now, I don't align with the phrase that users are the weakest link. I think what has happened over the years is we haven't developed our infrastructures to be secure from the very beginning. Like somebody clicking on a link in an email or an attachment in the email
bring down the whole business.
It would be better, more resilient and better designed to protect the business and the users from any mistakes that people may make. Because criminals are investing lots and lots of money in these attacks. They have, you know, ransomware gangs, they actually have financial experts on their team, so that when they infiltrate your company, they will examine your account details and your financials, so that when they put in a ransomware demand, they know you can afford to pay that. They have people who will craft phishing emails to really make people take the bait. So for them, it is a business. And I suppose that's one element when we talk about investment, we didn't mention it. You know, the good guys on one side of the fight are investing money in trying to protect systems. The bad guys on the other side are also in investing money. And to me, that's why it's so important. And Dennis mentioned the Verizon Data Breach Investigation Report. That is a fantastic report. As I said at the top of the podcast, I set up BH Consulting, but in 2008, I also set up Ireland's first computer emergency response team. And that was set up to provide an independent resource for information sharing and alerts and warnings about attacks to Irish businesses. And it's to provide a way to share information, because if we know how to, if we can better share information and we know how these criminals are attacking us, we can then design our defenses better. And the Verizon Data Breach Investigation Report, in case people are not aware of it, is developed by Verizon, but they partner with many organizations worldwide, computer emergency response teams worldwide. They partner with law enforcement agencies worldwide. They partner with cybersecurity companies worldwide. And, you know, our research, which is the cert I run, we provide information from the breaches we've seen in an anonymous fashion. Verizon take that information from all those sources, analyzes, and produce a report every year, which is very easy to read, and you can see trends that are happening. And you know, as Dennis said, 83% of attacks, according to the latest Verizon report, are down to the human element, and that's where a lot of the you know, focus needs to be. But having that information, it now means that as defenders, we know where we can focus our budgets, we can and how we can focus our efforts. So information sharing is absolutely vital, and I would tip my hat as well to Proofpoint for their reports, the Human Factor report and the CISO reports, are excellent resources as well to try and get to for businesses who are looking to defend themselves to look at ways to do it properly.
And that's fantastic. It's amazing to hear, like, just the knowledge sharing and the reports there that can be so helpful to others. And you know, turning over to Dennis and Ryan, because you know, we're talking, I asked the question about collaboration, but right now the two of you are actually sitting in the same room together at the moment, attending the same event. So clearly there must be some good knowledge sharing going on in the industry at the moment.
Yeah, no, there is. In fact, Ron and I were laughing because I've seen him more on the road this past year at other events too. We just keep running into each other at these security events, and it's been great actually. But yeah, I think, yeah, knowledge sharing is one of the most important things that can happen. I remember even when I was in the telecom side, in fact, when I was at Verizon, actually, I was there for a number of years in the security team. We were attempting to trade data with companies like America Online and my previous employer, AT&T, and some other ones. And yet the attorneys kept getting involved and said, no, we can't share that data. There's something wrong about that, or it's illegal or whatever, right? Competitive. And we're scratching our head kind of going, no, this is important. Like, in order for us to learn from each other, because the hacker or whatever the situation I was dealing with, they're going to move to the next network, right? They're going to abuse the next system. And so even for a lot of us, we actually ended up creating a nonprofit organization for us called MOG. No, it's not half man, half dog. That's a Spaceball reference. But it's the Messaging Anti-Abuse Working Group. And we created that organization in 2004, literally with the idea that it would be a safe space, a Chatham House rules organization to be able to trade. And we still meet. In fact, we were just here in Ireland, in Dublin, Ireland, in June of this year, holding our cyber conference. And it allows us to have these, again, closed door meetings to some extent, but we can trade that information back and forth with each other. And we write best common practices sometimes around these situations, so that we can then, anybody who wants to use the best common practices may download them for free and apply them. We did some work with the Latin America groups, some of the folks in Asia Pac. We did some documents around customer premise equipment and how to secure them, not just for our use, but for anybody's uses and whatnot. So it becomes invaluable to be able to share that information.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I have to say, the cybersecurity community is also very special and is a bit more unique than other industries, where actually CISOs, CIOs, security practitioners actually do collaborate quite a lot. You have WhatsApp groups, you have different kind of email threads and different kind of groups and associations, actually, where there is open sharing on certain information, practices, threats, whatever it is. And that is cross-Atlantic. So it's not only in the US, it is across Europe. For example, there's a group called CCL, there's SBCI, there are many, many other groups and subgroups and different kind of groups for different kind of subjects and different kind of insights that you are going to get from these groups that actually can really help. And that is seen specifically in the cybersecurity space quite a lot, which I have not seen in other areas, actually. I've seen some lawyers and some associations actually collaborate, but I have not seen them actually share information. So yeah, spot on.
Interesting. So I have to pivot slightly, because when you mention lawyers and associations, all I'm thinking about right now is that there's obviously in the space an ever-changing regulatory environment as well, and new standards and best practices keep on coming into play. So, you know, Brian, I'll start with you first. Like, you know, with all of this change, like, what are some of the things that are happening that could potentially impact this industry moving forward from a best practice or regulatory standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's just a sign of, Dave, as to how important cybersecurity is becoming to society and businesses as a whole, in that the governments and regulatory bodies around the world are now realizing that cybersecurity has to be taken seriously. I hate using that phrase, because every time somebody has a breach, you always hear them saying, yeah, we take security seriously. Of course, what's happening is that a lot of businesses have been left to, if for want of a better phrase, to self-regulate when it comes to cybersecurity and data protection. And there's been a light-handed touch over the past years in letting companies look after cybersecurity and look after data protection. And that has proven not to be successful, because we need to raise the bar to ensure that we protect the core assets that we're trying to protect, and protect people's information, and protect critical systems as well. So at the EU level, there are lots of regulations coming through. We've already seen one of the big ones, which is the German Data Protection Regulation, which came into force in 2018. But there's other ones coming down the track. We have the Network Information Security Directive version 2, which will come into law in every member state in the EU in October of next year. And that's going to force regulated bodies. So these will be bodies that are deemed essential or important to society in each of the member states. So energy, utilities, medical, finance, etc., will now have a new set of cybersecurity requirements that they're going to have to meet. And that they will then be regulated to ensure that they are meeting those requirements. And if they don't, they can face significant fines. A key part of NIS 2 is going to be a focus on those regulated bodies, and those regulated entities are going to have to ensure the security of their supply chain. So any businesses out there who are providing services, any SMEs or other business providing services into those regulated bodies, will have to prove to those entities that they've got good cybersecurity frameworks in place, and that they are secure. That's going to have a major impact. We have the EU Cybersecurity Act. That's going to bring in certification schemes for products and software. So any hardware products or any software products that are coming, that are going to be sold to the within the EU market, will have to meet a minimum standard of security. Those certification standards are currently being developed. And once they're out there, that means if you are a software supplier or a hardware supplier, you're going to have to make sure your product meets these standards in order to be certified to be sold within the EU. Similar to if you go and buy a electrical device, you have minimum standards you have to meet as a manufacturer to make sure your device doesn't explode or go on fire or burn people or cause any harm in that way. So similar, that's going to happen on the software side and on the hardware side. So if you are a company developing software, developing hardware, looking to sell it into the EU, you're going to have to meet those requirements. And there's other regulations coming through as well, with the Cyber Resilience Act. There's going to be the Digital Operations Resilience Act, which is going to focus on financial entities. So there's quite a lot of stuff coming down at the EU level that's going to be pushed down into member states and then onto businesses to ensure that we are all taking appropriate levels of responsibility in securing the data and the systems that, that we have. And similar to GDPR, once GDPR came into place in the EU, you could see other regions followed suit in their own data protection laws. And I think we're going to see other countries and regions take place. We're seeing that already in the US with the President Biden's executive order last year on government bodies having to certify their supply chain and make sure the supply chains are secure. So there's a lot of standards and regulations coming that, if you know, they're going to impact you, whether you're a manufacturer or whether you're a consumer of technology, you're going to need to be aware of these things.
And going over to Dennis, over to you next, because you know, when we look at all of these new frameworks and these new regulations, I mean, it is setting a higher standard and it's raising the bar. Like, do you see this as a net benefit overall to the industry?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's a positive and a negative behind it, right? The positive is that, you know, we're able to obviously, hopefully start having companies take privacy and security, very seriously. But, you know, in the European Union, right, you know, starting, I mean, shoot, the United Kingdom has had regulations on the books since, what, 73, 74, 75, right? And then, obviously, the EU directive in 1995 became the standard for the Union itself. And as usual, right, the European Union has always been at the forefront of keeping up with the regulations. And starting in, what, 2012 and, what, 2018 is when GDPR officially came out, when we were working on it. Well, it was created to upgrade the regulations to stay in touch with what technology had been released or how it's being used. You know, so really, I say this, and sometimes people find it very controversial, but privacy is a fundamental human right, I think, more in Europe than it is in other countries like the United States, where we tend to sectoralize our regulations. We tend to, we're a buy one, get one free nation. My wife will give away any part of her PII for that Payless, you know, shoe buy that she can get. I joke, but I mean, it happens. But the problem right now, I think, in the US is, you know, as we were just mentioning, you know, the other countries have a overarching umbrella of laws. You know, you have it in Latin America, you have it in Europe here, you have it in Japan under APPI as an example. But again, sectoralizing, and right now in the United States, the states are tired and they no longer want to wait for the federal government to institute regulations. We currently have 10 different state regulations right now. And again, great. In fact, Texas was one of the most recent ones, and that'll go into effect, I think, in January of 2024. But what that's doing, unfortunately, is it's creating consumer confusion as to what their rights are and crazy burdens on these businesses going, okay, I'm in Texas, but yet my client or my users in California, how does the laws apply and what are their choices? So we, again, very great sort of things that are happening, but at the same time, we actually, sometimes I feel like we're creating more problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Creating opportunities for lawyers to make lots of money.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love that. And Ryan, any thoughts yourself on this?
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely spot on. When a regulation comes out, what does it actually mean? How is there any assistance actually in helping organizations adopt it? Do they actually understand it? What does it actually mean? What's the impact on the business? What is the impact on consumers? Every time we bring something out, what we've been seeing consistently over the last few decades is there's a huge gap between technology and then bureaucracy and legals. And the gap is in certain areas widening, and certain areas it's narrowing down. But really, how are we bridging that gap? That is going to be $1 million question. And I think it just relates to people, right? And how we simplify processes and coming straight to the point. And especially when we are talking more from an engineering perspective, we like to get to the point very quickly, whilst a lawyer will take again half a day to translate that one sentence into a book. So really, what does it mean for consumers? Make it easy, accessible, and enable them actually to adopt it in a meaningful way that actually helps the business, and not just buying new technologies and having them on the book and never using them. I spoke to one bank and they had over 70 pen test solutions. They didn't know what half of them were. So, yeah.
Wow, interesting. So I have to move things. I mean, we are talking about the regulatory environment, but, you know, one of the also positives that I've kind of seen, especially from the Irish side of things, is the Irish government investing heavily in the cybersecurity sector. You know, in 2021, the Irish government launched the National Cybersecurity Strategy, for example. What else could governments like Ireland be doing to help foster this industry? And, you know, is there anything that the Ireland should be doing as a whole to kind of grow itself into a world leader in cybersecurity? And I'll start off with Dennis with that question. I'd love your perspective. And now, seeing as how you're actually sitting in Ireland at the moment.
Yeah, no, I think, gosh, like, what else could they be doing? I mean, Ireland has already been doing a huge amount of investments into this. I mean, part of this obviously being Enterprise Ireland, but, you know, here, you know, we have, or at least in Ireland, right, it's, you have one of the most talented, educated, you know, set of folks here, especially from the technology side of things. You know, the education system in Europe, but also here, is just, it's number one, or at least, I mean, when you look at sort of like how Ireland ranks, I think it's ranked 9th in the Western part of Europe, and I believe 16 globally in terms of, you know, being that, you know, that hotbed here. But I mean, it's Ireland's, you know, economy is also proven, you know, resilient in sort of like the recessions and other sort of market conditions that have happened. You know, it's one of the lowest tax bases, if not the lowest tax base right now, which is why companies have been coming here for so many years. But for me, you know, as I looked at some of the startups and companies that I've worked with as well, you know, being able to put an office here for us, you know, outside of like support hours and those sorts of things, has always been beneficial for us, because we, you know, people can, well, they love living here. You know, it's a very happy place to be right now. And yeah, I'm not sure what else they could be doing. I mean, unless they want to pay a whole lot more and even reduce taxes more, but I think it's been a great place to be for people and for businesses.
Yeah, I mean, you have mentioned, obviously, the work that Enterprise Ireland have done. You know, I mean, you know, we're here thanks to Enterprise Ireland, so definitely a shout out to them and the ongoing work that they're doing. Ryan, I'll pass it over to you, being in the same room there, dialing in from Ireland. Like, is there anything that you could see the Irish government doing or continuing to do to help foster the industry?
Specifically to startups or just in general to the industry?
I think I think for the industry as a whole, that would be great.
Yeah, of course. So first of all, I think Enterprise Ireland and the IDA have been doing an incredible amount of work both ways, export and import, in terms of creating these collaboration and environments where others are able to exchange ideas, actually are able to meet. And I've actually not seen one country do that, actually. I think Ireland is the only one in the world that is doing it to that extent. And I think it is really bearing fruit, because you're looking at all the organizations that are here in Ireland, international organizations, cybersecurity, from cybersecurity to any other vertical. But what I would say here is, just to continue the great work, really foster more around continuing to bring people together from different areas, different sectors, industry experts. And for example, for us, we are creating a center of excellence now and here in Ireland around data encryption and cryptography. And it will be one of the first in Europe actually specializing in data encryption. And that's, again, being supported by by the Irish government. And that's something that is literally unheard of, investing in startups all the way to supporting them, growing the ecosystem, large enterprises, fostering relationships inside and outside. So I've been at events in the US and they were supported and sponsored by Enterprise Ireland, and that has been great. So continuing the effort, accelerating it, and fostering an open culture around it, cross-border collaboration. And I think, like you said, Dennis, they've already been doing a tremendous amount. Texas, I don't think, can go any further.
Yeah, no, it's 2022 was a banner year for Ireland, right? Yeah. There was, almost $1 billion from the VC investment side that was put out here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing to me to see how much investments are occurring. Yeah. And again, like what Enterprise Ireland has done, right? They've already invested heavily in their West Coast office. Now they've got their East Coast office now. Yeah. And the plan is to continue to push as much as they can.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, one question I have to ask this group, because we've mentioned Enterprise Ireland a few times here. I'd love to hear, what you've been doing with Enterprise Ireland and how Enterprise Ireland has specifically benefited your business. And Brian, if you don't mind, I'll start with you.
Sure. Yeah. Enterprise Ireland has been a great support to us. I suppose we're probably rather unusual in the IT sector as an Enterprise Ireland client, is that we're a knowledge company. We're not selling a product, so we're not software developers, we're not hardware developers. And that can be quite a competitive environment to be selling, especially internationally. So Enterprise Ireland have been giving us lots of support in that area, in advice and mentoring and guidance as to how to approach certain markets, what to think about, how to market into those areas. So it's like when people think about Enterprise Ireland, and if they haven't had any experience, and I think what they see is a government body that just gives money to startups to help those startups get off the ground and be successful. But it's a lot more than that. The financial side of things, while important, is a small part of the overall package. There's if you want to host an event in any of the countries abroad, be that in the US or Europe or elsewhere, Enterprise Ireland can help you do that, either using their premises or advising you on where to go, and opening doors to potential customers or potential markets as well. So they've provided us with a lot of help and support in that way, in trying to figure out how we approach different markets and what's the best way to get more customers and keep those customers, which is important. Obviously, the more, investment is important, but having a sustainable, successful business is even more so. And getting paying customers in the door is the important thing. And they've been a great support for us in doing that.
Dennis, I'll pass it over to you with the same question.
For me, on the personal side, and I keep mentioning that Ryan and I keep bumping into each other. I had the pleasure of meeting Ryan last year at the same event, and I've been able to stay in touch with him and several other companies as well, which come in handy as I touch other things outside of Proofpoint occasionally. I'm able to make some introductions for these companies that have come through Enterprise Ireland. I'm able to make introductions to some of the startups that we sometimes mentor and come across in the investment space as well. And that holds true even today. I've already met a couple of companies today that I've got some ideas that I might be able to help move their businesses forward. And who knows, maybe some of these could be involved, at the Proofpoint level as well, as we talk with them.
I love that. And finally, Ryan, over to you.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, Enterprise Ireland has been our first investor, one of our first investors. And what they do is, and this is actually quite rare. I think Israel is the only other country that is really doing this in a certain way. And even then, it's tied to the IP being in Israel, as far as I know. But in relation to Enterprise Ireland, they were open enough to actually sit down with us and see what we were doing, how we were doing it, and being open-minded, really, from a perspective, okay, let's get some people into a room that understand it a bit more, have some conversations, really trying to understand how we are going to be able to not only solve this problem, but also how can we help them to actually bring it to market and help them grow and develop them. And that has been an incredible opportunity for us to actually get to know everyone. And we even ended up hiring two ex-Enterprise Ireland individuals. So yeah, it's been a great relationship to date. Yeah.
I love hearing that. And, you know, it's fantastic to hear just how collaborative everything seems to be. And I think that's been, you know, aside from the importance of cybersecurity, it really does, the theme of collaboration seems to be permeating through everything that folks are saying. Maybe not on the lawyer side of things, but that's a different thing, of course. But, you know, to kind of close this out, like, you know, we obviously have a variety of different people listening to this call now. And, you know, currently cybersecurity is taking the top as the most crucial IT staffing priority for organizations when it comes to new tech talent. So for those listening to this who may be inspired to jump into this industry, is there any advice that you would offer to them right now? And Ryan, I'll start with you, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure. Don't let others tell you something is not possible. and
that's what your phone says on it right now. It says make it possible, right?
Actually, yeah, it does. That's true. Yeah, yeah. I totally forgot. It says make it possible, but follow your passion and look. Talk to others, because you might not be aware of what actually is out there. You might be just really in a tunnel, not realizing, okay, I have all these other opportunities and all these other areas I actually might enjoy. Go to areas, places where those individuals are, talk to them, and don't be shy. The worst you're going to get is a no, but even if you get a no, don't take it. So that's the best advice I can give you.
I love that. And Dennis, over to you.
Yeah, I would agree with what Ryan said. You know, try it out. You know, I think people unfortunately sometimes think of like the Hackers movie from 1995, that's how you have to be. You got to be very smart and you got to be, you know, very codey and whatnot. And I'm a self-taught geek, if you will, and pretty blessed in that area. But, you know, like one of my sons, you know, who is going into this area, decided to start to self-teach himself. And he started taking some real basic Coursera courses, actually. And they work pretty well because it starts teaching them, you know, a little bit about the policies and the procedures. But there's so many different levels within cybersecurity that you can work. Again, you don't have to be the hacker. You don't have to know how to code. If you understand, you know, policies and procedures and things like that, I mean, I've seen some attorneys who have gone from the traditional, you know, area of law, contract law, and ended up in privacy and made that now their career. So yeah, I think as Ryan said, don't fear it, jump in. You'd be very surprised.
And Brian, over to you to close us out.
Yeah, some excellent points made by both Dennis and Ryan there. It's I suppose when Dennis and I got involved in cybersecurity, there was no career path in cybersecurity back then. There probably wasn't even a career back in those days. So, but today that has changed quite a lot, and there's lots of opportunities. And as Ryan and Dennis said, if you're interested in getting into cybersecurity, don't let what you might think your lack of knowledge stop you. We as an industry need more people to come in. There is an enormous skills gap in cybersecurity, and we're not going to address that skills gap by hiring hackers all the time or technologists all the time. A core message coming through our conversation today that I've noticed is the people factor, and we need people who can communicate clearly to business, to individuals, who are able to promote good security, who are good at policies, who are good at managing risk, who are probably good at marketing, and all those other areas that we need to improve in cybersecurity. Dennis is a great suggestion there. There's lots of free resources online. There's Coursera, Udemy. There's lots of those type of courses you can go to. There's lots of capture the flag and conventions that go around. So for example, here in Ireland, we've got the 0 Days Capture the Flag team who run hacking competitions, if you like, at events throughout Ireland. And normally they're free, and you can go in and you can learn from others and network with others. So attend conferences, attend events. And as Ryan says, don't be afraid to go for something. If you see a job spec that you're interested in, even if you don't have every single item on that list, do apply for the job. You know, many times employers put out a job spec in the hope of getting the one or two candidates that have all the skills they've been on that job advert, but many times they don't get that. So do try and go for it. I would encourage people from other backgrounds, from a diverse background, to go for those jobs as well. We need diversity in the industry. We need more influences and backgrounds to help us shape the cybersecurity products and services and make the world a safer place. And you can do that. So go for it. Make it possible.
I love this. And I just have to say, I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's just really interesting to hear all of your perspectives. And I do love the fact that, you know, Brian, we started off like with you highlighting the human element to all of this. And as you've mentioned, it really did permeate throughout our discussion. So I know all of you are exceptionally busy, so really have to just thank you for taking out the time. But to finish us up, I'd love to hear what's next for you and your business, and what's a success look for like for you over the next 12 months? And Dennis, if we could start with you, that'd be great.
Well, that's a big question, actually. I guess from the Proofpoint perspective, I mean, obviously, you know, being, you know, hopefully, you know, one of the top providers of securing, you know, that human element sort of situation, you know, that's our big goal right now, is to make sure that we can make it as easy as possible for people to be secured and to not find it to be intrusive, right? And over the years, as these security technologies or ideas that came out, we'll use two factors as an example. People always hated the idea of two factor because it requires an extra 5 seconds of your day, but I digress. But you know, if we can make security as clean and as easy, you know, for people to adopt and to use in their companies and maybe even in their own personal lives, I think that's a pretty big goal of ours in terms of that. On the personal side, I think it kind of goes down to what we've all been talking about, is working together, right? Is to continue to help each other, right? And to be kind to each other. And, you know, whenever you can lend a hand, to folks, whether it's working with their company or making introductions and things like that, I just think it would make, you know, things great for us.
Love that. And Ryan, over to you next.
Yeah, sure. Dennis, I loved what you were saying. Data privacy being a human right, that's actually how we started making this world a better place. And that is how we are going to continue. Foundationally, what we have developed, we strongly believe that this should be a standard, really, and enable organizations to unlock their data, work with the data, stay compliant, but really, most importantly, enable data privacy, which, again, as Dennis was saying earlier, is a human right. So we are now at the stage. We raised our Series A in December, and implementations with customers, get this technology to customers to solve their problems. And there are some very exciting next steps that are happening, and we are very much so looking forward to that. And personally, I'm all over the place. So that's literally it. Dennis is probably going to see me somewhere in the US, somewhere in Australia. And yeah, I'm literally traveling on the road trip and trying to bring this to others as quickly as possible to help them.
And Brian, I'll leave the last word to you.
Well, when I set up BH Consulting in, back in 2004, and as it's grown over the years, I've always had the strategy that we are a people company, and I mean a people company in two ways. Number one, we're people focused internally, that we always look after our staff. We are we hire excellent people, and I'm a lucky person to have an excellent team behind me. And unusually in cybersecurity industry, we actually have more women in the company than we do men. So we've cracked the diversity challenge quite nicely, which is a bonus. But also from a people point of view, and that helping our clients, we focus on what our clients' requirements are, but also extending the message that both Dennis and Ryan have been given there, is that ultimately what we're doing is we're helping our clients protect their systems, protect the data, and protect the people that that data belongs to. And that's where our focus is, that's where our focus has been, that's where our focus is, and that's where I want our focus to continue to be as we grow. So yeah, that's what my hopes are for the company as we continue on.
Gentlemen, thank you so much again for joining me. This was really inspiring and fascinating discussion. Can't thank you enough, and I wish you all the best for the future.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, that is it for today's episode. But before we close out, Claire, I want to turn back to you, because we heard so much praise for the work that Enterprise Ireland are doing. Is there anything that Enterprise Ireland are doing in this space that you wanted to speak about or highlight to our listeners?
Thanks, Dave. Yes. Such an enjoyable conversation and such great contributions from all three panelists. I suppose the message to reiterate to any of the listeners, I think delighted that Enterprise Ireland was given such warm praise from all the panelists, but it really is to recognise that I suppose our role here is to be as helpful as we can to client companies, and I suppose that comes in a number of different ways. For any Irish company who's already connected in with Enterprise Ireland, you know, there's a suite of supports available from Ireland. Obviously, I'm out here in New York, and I have colleagues in global offices all over the world who are supporting cybersecurity companies along with companies from all of our sectors. Every company seems to need different things at different time points. So a lot of it is really about what is the right support that we can bring to a company at the right time. And coming back to that people piece within the podcast, I think that building a relationship with our client companies is fundamental to how we can support them. So be it your relationship with your development advisor back in Ireland or with your market advisor overseas, the more we know about you and your company, what you need, what your ambition is, how you plan to get there, the more we can help you get there. So delighted to be working alongside the likes of Brian and Dennis here is a really critical champion for us out here in the US. We've had a long-standing relationship with him, and I guess the overarching message is, we're here to help and get in touch. You can get us at enterpriseireland.com, start with our home offices across the country in Ireland and take it from there.
I love that. So that is enterpriseireland.com, and anywhere
enterprise-ireland.com. Apologies. Always forget the hyphen.
enterprise-ireland.com. Love it.
We have a new website coming soon. So
Claire, thank you so much again for helping put together this panel. And thank you, the listeners. If you are listening to this, please do share with anybody that you think may find this of interest. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you may listen to your podcasts. Thank you very much.